chapter 17, verse 6 through verse 21. John chapter 17, verse 6 through verse 21. I have manifested your name to the men who you gave me out of the world. They were yours, and you gave them to me, and they have kept your word. Now they have come to know that everything you have given me is from you, for the words which you gave me I have given to them, and they received them and truly understood that I came forth from you, and they believe that you sent me. I ask on their behalf, I do not ask on my behalf of the world, but of those whom you have given me, for they are yours. And all things that are mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I have been glorified in them. I am no longer in the world, and yet they themselves are in the world. And I come to you, Holy Father, keep them in your name, the name which you have given me, that they may be one even as we are. While I was with them, I was keeping them in your name, which you have given me, and I guarded them, and not one of them perished, but the son of perdition, so that the scripture would be fulfilled. Now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, so that they may have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is true. As you sent me into the world, I have also sent them into the world. For their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves may also be sanctified in the truth. I do not ask on behalf of these alone, but for those also who believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, even as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to see all of you here with us tonight. We are appreciative of your presence. And we look forward to the opportunities that we all have to be together, and we hope that your afternoon has been good. And there is something that I want to challenge you to do that has a lot of bearing on what we're going to discuss this evening, and that is if you have not considered the fact of how important it would be to pray about keeping the church holy and blameless, I would encourage you to do so. Because there's a lot to be said from the standpoint of either morality or from the standpoint of doctrinally or whatever the case may be, there's something to be said for the church being kept holy and blameless. Your prayers on that behalf can make a great difference in that happening. So do not think that there's not something good can be done as a result of that. So please consider that this week as you go about your daily life. When you think about what we talked about last Sunday, about the idea of keeping the church holy and blameless, we looked at the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and verse 2, and we're going to go over there and we're going to talk about it again. What we didn't do last Sunday, we didn't go over the last 10, 15, 20 years and talk about all the many changes that goes on in the church and see why in the world all those things happen. What we did was we went to what the scriptures talk about here to understand how it is that we can be a part of making the church holy and blameless. And the things that you see found in the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 1 in particular, is he begs us, he gives us this invitation to be people who will present our bodies holy, a living sacrifice, something that is acceptable to God, which is something that's reasonable to do. It's not something outside the realm of impossibility. You can't do this. It is something within reason for everyone to do this. But then you get to the first part of chapter 12, verse 2 rather. He says, be not fashioned according to this world. That's a very easy thing to say, but a very difficult thing to follow through with. There is a story that is told, and it's a true story, of this little place in Italy, of a city where there is this beautiful Greek girl that is a statue of this girl in the city that was very neatly dressed, very beautiful young lady, that there's this little slave girl that came up and saw this girl. She was dirty. She was nasty, we would say. She was not very well kept. She looked at this statue of this girl, and then she went home. She combed her hair and she washed her face. Then she went back and she looked at that statue again. She looked at it very intently, and then she went back home again. And this time she took a bath and she combed her hair. She washed her face and she put on better shoes. Then she went back to the statue again and looked at it a little bit more intently. And then she went back home. And as the story goes, nobody knows exactly how many times she did this, but she tried to do everything she could to in some way copy and mimic and imitate what it was she saw in that beautiful, neatly dressed, modest girl in that statue. And when you look at what the Scriptures teach about all that we are supposed to be doing as children of God, there is one thing that you will see that the Scriptures teach. There's only one person that we're always given the opportunity to mimic or to pattern ourselves after, and that's Jesus Christ. We're told this is the one that you're supposed to follow. In the book of 1 Peter chapter 2, in verse 21, we're told that we're supposed to follow His steps. In the book of Romans chapter 8, in verse 28 and 29, we're supposed to be individuals that are doing everything we can to conform to His image, to be what Jesus was, as He was upon the face of the earth. And then even when you talk about the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 3, in verse 18, it talks about the very same thing regarding Jesus Christ. And this is what it says in that chapter. He says, "But we all, with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are transformed to the same image from glory to glory, even as from the Lord the Spirit." And then when you look in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, Paul says, "Be imitators of me." Well, I thought you just said that the Scriptures talk about we're supposed to be imitating Jesus. But he qualifies that by saying, imitate Jesus. Be imitators of me, even as I also am of Christ. And this one person, Jesus Christ, is the one that we're supposed to mimic, or we're supposed to follow. We're supposed to copy ourselves after. That's one of the things that Jesus talks about here in the book of John chapter 17. As he talks to his disciples before he leaves them, in his last little conversation with them, before he's taken off to be tried and crucified, he says, "I want you, God," and praying to God. And a lot of times people talk about the Lord's Prayer in the book of Matthew chapter 6, and this is one of the Lord's Prayers too, here in the book of John chapter 17, where he says, "God, I want you to keep them in the world, but I don't want them to be of the world. I need them there, but insulate them while they're there. Let the Word be the thing that will dictate everything that they do. Don't isolate them out here and say, I want you to keep them over here so nobody can touch them. And so nobody can mess with their minds and pollute them and defile them and corrupt their thinking." He says, "I want them there, but I want to let the Word be that which dictates everything they do. I want them out there so that they can help other people see that they believe in me and that they ought to believe in me just the same." And I want to challenge all of you to understand, and I think you probably well know this. This is us. Like the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 2, it says, "Be not conformed to this world." This is like God saying, let them stay there, but insulate them while they're there. Let them be the one that is the example. Let them be the one that's the leader. Let them be the one that can show other people that believing in the Lord is the best thing in the world, so that the church will be holy and blameless, just the way God wanted it to be. Like the book of Ephesians chapter 5, verse 27 says. Biggest question is, when it comes down to the idea of the world that the book of Romans chapter 12, 2 talks about, why is it that people need to conform to the world anyway? And I use that word "need" in quotations because it's almost like they just have to do this. Well, one of the reasons they believe they need to do this is because it's easier to conform than it is to try to change anything. And a lot of people say, well, there's just people's minds are already set, and there's nothing you can do to change anything. It's just, that's just the way it is. And there's become to be the idea that you just kind of do it and believe it or accept it because that's just the way things are. Well, that was for Peter. That was easier to do. In the book of Luke chapter 22, it was easier for him just to go ahead and just conform into and kind of mold himself into and kind of blend in with the crowd, we would say. As the Scriptures talk about warming his hands by the fire. And then there's a case in the book of James chapter 1 where people will talk of religions and they'll talk about the Word and they'll say the Word's a good thing and we all need to understand it. But in the book of James 1 verse 23 it says, "For if anyone is a hearer of the Word and not a doer, it's like unto a man beholding his natural face in a mirror. He beholds himself and goes away and straightway forgets what manner of man he was. And that's the essence of some people's thinking. They say the church needs to be pure and holy. It's so much easier to conform than it is to just change things. It's a matter of acceptance. If we can just be accepted, because it takes a lot less effort and it's safer to just go with the flow. Same thing happened in the book John chapter 12, verse 42 and 43 with the men in the synagogue. The rulers of the synagogue, they would rather love the praise of men more than they would the praise of God. Even in the book of Galatians chapter 1, Paul even asked himself this question. When he wrote these letters to these churches in Galatia, he says, am I trying to please men or am I trying to please God? There's something to be said for what I'm saying here. And all of us have that challenge. Do we want the acceptance? Do we want to just easily flow into everything because that's just the way it is? That's why some people say they need to conform. And then some people need to conform because they're so attached to their relationships. We have so many different relationships with people in this world that we become so attached to them that sometimes we can't really see what our responsibility is with them and for them. Children become attached to parents, and over time they become so attached to parents it's almost like their parents never do anything wrong or their grandparents never do anything wrong. And then as time goes on, as they get a little older and they get into the teenage years, then they get attached to the friends, and it's almost as if their friends don't do anything wrong. And now all those friends, they find this one girl that they want to get married to, or this one boy that they want to get married to, and they get so attached to them that they can never do anything wrong. And it's so much easier to find ourselves wanting the need to be needed by the world because there's so great of attachment to that. Remember the book of 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 22 to verse 25, and even in the chapter 3 where Eli had trouble admonishing, or we would say reproving or disciplining his sons. Just like it would be, just he's had such attachment to that relationship that he just let them do whatever it was they wanted to do. And that's just one of the things that people have as a need to conform to the world. And then there's this idea that a lot of people talk about when it comes down to idea of the world. It's the pressure. It's just too much. It's almost as if they're forcing me into doing this. They're forcing me into wearing this. They're forcing me into saying this. Same thing that Aaron faced in the book of Exodus chapter 32. These people wanted this. This is what they decided that they wanted to do. And as a result of that, that's why I made this. And if you were to read the book of Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10 to verse 26, that's a very interesting reading. Because in that passage just explains very clearly to you how it is that people in the world can pressure you into doing things you never ever thought you'd ever do. Saying things you never thought you'd ever say. Believing things you thought you'd never believe. That was the problem in the book of Acts chapter 15. Verse 1 to verse 3, where the Jews were saying and talking about how it is that they need to be circumcised. They need to be circumcised. And pressuring people into doing something. And that's why people have the need to conform. There's so much pressure out there. And then there are some people, to be conformed to the world, they just believe they need to do this because of all the lusts that are out there. There are three forms of lust. There's this lust of the eyes, there's this lust of the flesh, and there's the pride of life. All three are contributing to the idea of lust. And people are taking a natural desire that they've got, and all of a sudden they're changing it and doing something outside the realm of what God wanted to do with that. Adultery, fornication, homosexuality, abortion, lying, even ignorance is one of these things that people are just, they're lusting for not knowing. If I don't know this, I'm not responsible for it. As long as they don't know it, they don't have to deal with it. In the book of James, the first chapter, verse 14, verse 15, it just tells you the flow of this, that this lust, when it's given to you as a temptation by the devil, people just grab a hold of that, and they just grab a hold of it so much that they just can't let it go. And as a result of that, they bring it to fruition. It's manifested. They thought about it long enough, they lusted about it long enough, they've got to just try this and just see if it really does bring to them what it is they think. Everybody else has told them that it would. And they do it. And then it brings death.
They're hurt.
They're in pain. They're in sorrow. They're guilty. They feel bad. They're in agony. All because of the fact that they saw that this was something that they needed. To conform to the world, they needed this lust. And they'll break every rule they can to get it. They'll go around all the rules to get to it. They'll do anything they can to get what it is they want. They'll devise a plan to make sure it happens. Because it's the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. They've rationalized a way to do this. That's why people see the need to conform to the world. And then it gets to the point where it's just downright fun. It is downright fun to conform to the things of the world. In the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4, this is something we brought out in our class this morning. That there are so many people that love pleasure. They love the fun. And fun has, for some people, a great value. That if anything's to be done, it's got to have some connection with fun. And as long as it's got fun associated with it, then it's greater than anything else that could ever be found. And even when it comes down to religion and worship, if worship is not, in some respect, some kind of fun value to it, then it's not worth doing. Everything's almost got to have some kind of fun value. If it doesn't, then it's not worth doing. If I can't work long enough and hard enough to get what it is to have fun, then it's not worth doing. It's not worth all the work. It's not worth all the effort. And there's a lot of things in this world that are so much associated with fun that we need that, and as a result of that, that's why we conform to the world. That's why people seem to think they need this, because it's got so much value to it. The Proverb writer said something in Proverbs chapter 21, verse 17. He says, "He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man." He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. That probably puts it all in its true perspective, doesn't it? Maybe if we would look and listen to what goes on in the book of Hebrews chapter 11 with Moses. When you look at what happened with Moses in the book of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 to verse 26, he had every opportunity to have a lot of fun in Egypt. Because it talked about pleasures of sin in verse 25. It talked about greater riches and treasures in verse 26. But notice in verse 24, "By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked into the recompense reward." There are some folks that don't see fun associated with things of the world. They see the treasures of the Lord greater. They see the joys of the Lord greater. Matter of fact, in the book of Matthew chapter 25, do you remember what it was said to the man that doubled his talents? The five-talent man, the two-talent man? They were to be given the joy of the Lord. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Now you mean to tell me that that's greater than the fun that I can receive in the world? A lot of people seem to think that that's what they need. But the Scriptures teach otherwise. Now we've got to make the choice here. But what happens a lot of times when people get to the point of having this lust, wanting this acceptance, wanting this fun, wanting to do all these things because of a relationship that they were attached to, because they want this acceptance, then the next thing you know, they covet it. It's a coveted thing. They do everything they can to get this because they want this thing. And we're living in a world, and have been for quite some time, of a want society. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And a lot of times parents ask their children, "What do you want?" rather than giving them what it is they need. If you notice the book of Colossians chapter 3, there's something that's said about covetousness that sometimes we often overlook. He says, "Covetousness, which is idolatry." A lot of folks may not necessarily associate the idea of covetousness with idolatry, but you just think about that just a minute. What would it mean to be a coveting person? It would mean, number one, you're going to conform to the world, true, but everything that's associated with that, you're going to want to do everything you can to get that. You're going to go to no ends to make it happen. It's going to consume your time. It's going to change your lifestyle. It's going to create a desire for materialism. It's going to be crippling to your family. It's going to do everything it can to shift all your priorities around. And it's going to replace your faith. You don't realize it's going to do that. But people need that to conform to the world. But now I need to approach you with this. Through what you see in the Scriptures, how is it that we should really perceive the world? Is it something that we're supposed to be accepting? Is it something that we're supposed to see what we can do to kind of conform ourselves to? Is it something we're not to be lusting for? Is it something we ought to have fun with? Well, look at it from the perspective that the Scriptures teach. To be one who keeps yourself as well as the church holy and blameless, see what God says the world really is. The first thing I want you to think about with me, the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4. In 2 Corinthians 4 verse 3, this is the way Paul addresses the idea of the world and the God of this world and says, even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to them that perish, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of the unbelieving, that the light of the gospel of the glory of Jesus Christ, who is the image of God, should not dawn upon them. One of the first things that you'll see very quickly is this. In that passage, it gives you a very clear definition of the God of this world and what His intent and purposes are with you. And what He would love to do with the people in the church. He would love to see what He could do to veil the gospel. He doesn't want you to see the truth. He doesn't want you to participate in the truth. He doesn't want you near it. Because He knows what you're going to do with it when you get it. Not only that, He'd rather blind the minds of the unbelieving. He'd rather keep them exactly where they are, unbelieving. They don't know. They don't need to know what's right. They don't need to know the truth. They don't need to know the better way. As long as they can be kept from it, the better they'll be. But He also would like for you to understand that you need to be concerned about yourself. Paul says, we don't preach ourselves. But the God of this world would rather you preach who you are. Preach you, preach you, preach you. Talk about what it is you need. Talk about what it is that you're concerned, what it is that your desires. Always be interested in you, and don't be interested in anything else but you. If you were to take the thoughts of 2 Corinthians 4, 3 through 4, you were to follow through with that, what would it mean to the holy and blameless nature of the church? It'd soon be going down. It would not be holy anymore. It'd be unholy. It would be definitely a reproach, like it was for the people of Israel when they were talked about by the prophets. Their reproach to the people around them. There's something to be said for looking at this the way God sees this. Looking at the world the way God sees it. Well, how does God see this? Well, God sees people being deceived by the cares of the world. He sees that very clearly. If you notice with me in the book of Matthew chapter 13, verse 22, something that is stated there is worth our attention where He says, regarding the seed that was sown among the thorns, it says, and he was sown among the thorns is he that hears the word, and the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and becomes unfruitful. That's exactly what God knows the world can happen to the world. He knows the world can be deceived by the things of the world. He knows that very clearly. And it's not just one of these things that just comes on just one time in every generation. In the book of Hebrews chapter 13, verse 20, verse 13, it's one of these daily things. There are people that need to be concerned about the deceitfulness of sin every single day. It's not a one thing and that's it. This is the way God sees the world. And therefore, for us to be holy and blameless, we've got to see the world the same way. Which also means that God made it. Man didn't make it. God made man. And man didn't make God. There's something to be said for us wanting to be just like God by what the Scriptures teach. Then there's something to be said for people wanting to be their own God, to do what it is they want to do, when they want to do it, and how they want to do it. If you were to read the book of Jeremiah, the 10th chapter, verse 1 to verse 11, you will vividly see how that Jeremiah says, this God is a God that made man. This God is the God that made the world. This God is the God that everybody ought to honor and praise and respect and worship. This is the God that we ought to be serving. Rather than trying to make something else a God, including ourselves, and making ourselves into being the one that controls everything, as if to say we made it all. God knows that there are rulers in the world that know more about the wisdom of the world than they know about God. That's what God knows about the world. In the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6 to verse 8, this is something Paul declared as he was going about and preaching and teaching. He says, I'm not going about and preaching and teaching the wisdom of the world. And this is something he mentions in verse 4. He says, my preaching and my speech were not in persuasive words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. We speak wisdom, however, among them that are full grown, not of wisdom of this world, nor the rulers of this world who are coming to naught, but we speak God's wisdom in a mystery, even the wisdom that has been hidden, which God foreordained before the worlds unto our glory. Now you take a test in this. How many of all the world rulers are really talking about how to keep the church holy and blameless? When it comes down to the world rulers, what wisdom are they emphasizing? What is it that they're really teaching you and I? Is it the same thing that Paul's saying, I'm going about in teaching? If it were, then it would be like what he says in verse 5. Your faith will not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. This is what God sees the world being. Do we see this? If we see this, then we will understand more clearly of what we can do to keep the church holy and blameless. God sees in the world, there's always going to be this war between good and evil. Always going to be this way. It's going to be a place where people's going to have to discern between the good and between the bad. There's always going to be this debate. There's always going to be this battle. There's always going to be this challenge. And God is the only one that can help us discern between the good and the evil, rather than trying to take it upon ourselves to figure it out on our own. Case in point, Eve, in the book of Genesis chapter 3. When she heard the voice of Satan, what did she hear? Something that was going to promote lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride of life. And as a result of that, she was even told that you will be as God. And I wonder how many times we hear that same thing in another avenue or another place. Through friends, through relationships with people, through our desire to be accepted, through our desire to conform, because we don't need to be changing things because things aren't going to change. It's just going to be that way, and it's always the way it's going to be. Sometimes man is so set on himself that there's nothing that he can't do. Makes me think about the days of 9/11, when people probably thought that there would be no possibility of anybody coming in to this land and bombing it. Makes me understand a little bit more about God sees the world as a war between good and evil. And He knows everybody's going to be touched by it. Everybody's going to be touched by it. There's going to be some accidents by drunk drivers. There's going to be some scammers. There's going to be some people out here that's going to commit adultery. God knows that all the time. I mean, but in the process of all that, where do we stand? What are we going to do? Are we going to be the people who are going to get used to the smell? I think that's something we need to think about when we deal with what's going on in the book of Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and verse 2. To keep the church holy and blameless, you don't need to get used to the smell. I remember when I was living growing up in a place called Savannah, Tennessee, and we lived about 50 miles from the paper mill down by Pickwick Lake. And we knew when there was going to be rain coming because the wind would blow that paper mill smell all the way up to where we lived. And people would always say, when you smell the paper mill, you know rain's coming. There's one thing about us. We didn't live as close to the paper mill as some people did. But I wonder what it would have been like if you lived right next door to it or within, say, 4 miles of it. And you smell that thing all the time. And people come into there visiting and say, "Don't you smell what I'm smelling?" And say, What is that?" "I don't smell anything." That's that sour, that nasty smell. "Oh, that's the paper mill. That's the paper mill." And sometimes we need to understand about there's a sense of smell that we need to exercise when it comes down to the things of the world versus the things of God. And we don't need to find ourselves getting so used to the smell of sin that we like it enough that we want to participate in it. I think sometimes we need to really look at what the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 2 says. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 14 to verse 16. And these are the kinds of smells that we really need to find ourselves enjoying. He says, "But thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph in Jesus Christ and makes himself manifest unto us the savor of his knowledge in every place. For we are a sweet savor of Christ unto God, in them that are saved and in them that perish. To the one a savor from death unto death, to the other a savor from life unto life. And who is sufficient for these things?" A sweet savor. What smells good to us? Spiritually speaking, what really smells good to us? Is it adultery? Is it fornication? Is it sin? Is it the idea of lying? Is it purity? I mean, we're the individuals who really ought to want to smell and appreciate the desire of freedom from sin and holiness and purity and righteousness and godliness. These are the things. If you do these things, folks, you don't have to regret doing it. You don't have to be ashamed of this. You don't have to go back and say, "Well, I wish I'd never done this." Like we would do if it were stealing or gossip or lying or adultery and all those kinds of things. This is the value of helping the church to be pure, holy, and blameless. Which you and I have got a part in that. But it all depends on whether or not we're getting used to the smell of sin or are we wanting the smell of holiness and righteousness and godliness. To give you an understanding of just how easy it is to conform to a particular smell and a particular thing, there is a small place in Japan that a few years ago, and I think if I can say this right, it's Zentsu, something like that. It's Zentisji, Japan. Where what they did at that time, a few years ago, they produced and sold, and now get this, square watermelons. Square watermelons. You heard me right, square watermelons. What they did was they put the watermelon plant into a tempered cube and let it grow in that to the point that it conformed to be a square watermelon because it would find itself sitting into a refrigerator just right. And you could stack them all together if you wanted to. And you think, well, how in the world can you get a square watermelon? It's exactly the way they did it. It was easier to store in the refrigerator. They made all square watermelons. It conformed to the shape of that cube. And the world has a lot of forces upon us where it can cause us to be influenced and shaped just like them. And we can grow into that kind of thing easier than we seem to think. Therefore, we need to be the people who will find ourselves understanding very quickly that we don't need to be getting used to the smell. Because God's desire is for us to smell different. Fan of the book of Titus chapter 2, verse 14, zealous of good works. When people do that, they smell different. When people like 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 and verse 10, holy nation, elect race, royal priesthood, they smell different because they're God's own possession. And even when you look at the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, he says, how it is that you don't need to be unequally yoked with unbelievers? What fellowship has righteousness with iniquity? What communion has light with darkness? He even goes on and says in verse 15, what portion is a believer with unbeliever? What agreement has a temple of God with idols? And then he goes on and really emphasizes how it is in verse 17. Come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. And touch no unclean thing. Why can't I touch this? Why can't I smell like this? Because in verse 1 of chapter 7, he says, cleanse yourself from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. You've got to decide, what are you going to smell most? What do you want to smell like? Holiness? Or do you want to smell like defilement? You want to smell like somebody who's been cleansed by the blood of Jesus? Or do you want to look like somebody who's full of iniquity? Don't get used to the smell. Because God desires that you be different. Who we need to be is just exactly what Paul talked about in Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 17 and verse 24, when he talked about these Gentiles who were, in verse 18, darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that was in them, who being past feeling gave themselves up to lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. Then he says in verse 21, if so be that you heard him, Jesus Christ, and were taught in him, even as truth is in Jesus, that you put away all those former manner of life, the old man that waxeth corrupt after the lust of deceit, and that be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new man, that after God has been created in righteousness and holiness of truth. That's who we need to be. Somebody created in the righteousness and holiness of truth. If we would devote ourselves to that, just imagine what our life would be. What we would be to other people. What we would be to God. We would definitely look different. We would definitely speak different. We would feel different. We'd have different values. All those things would be different than what everybody else does. It's that difference that can make the difference. Not only in us, but it can make the difference in other people in Somerset, Kentucky. In other words, what I'm saying is, it's not so much that we're wanting this idea of keeping holiness and godliness or being blameless to us. This is something that everybody can participate in. Everybody can smell righteous rather than smelling like the world. Everybody can smell godly rather than smelling like the world. Not only is that something we're challenged to do, but that's something that we can help others do just the same. Let me suggest, in the process of this happening, that you be the one who will help this out. By number one, pray to God to search you and know who you are. Understand the impact of the war between the good and the evil. This is a valid war. This is an ever-present thing. Understand the influence of the world will be avoided by those who want to be warned. There's a lot of people that don't want to be warned. You remember, as I mentioned to you a while ago about the idea of 9/11, there are some people that have talked about how it was that we were warned before that day ever happened. People talked about it. People warned that was going to happen. People saw it coming. And some folks just shirked it off. As if, nah, that can never happen. The influence of the world can be avoided by those people that want to be warned, that want the information. How do I keep myself out of this? How do I keep myself from doing the same thing that I saw my friend do that was in school with me? How can I keep myself from becoming to be just like my neighbor or my fellow worker or my uncle or my grandfather? Some people want to be warned. And we also would be wise to think about what goes on in the book of Romans chapter 8, verse 38 and 39. In Romans 8, verse 30 and 39, he talks about how it is that we need to find ourselves understanding that there are some things that are really the love of Christ can help us with. I'm persuaded that neither death nor life nor angels nor principalities nor things present nor things to come nor height nor depth nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of Christ, which is love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. That's got to be a true, deep conviction. And then you think about it. Well, how are we going to overcome the world? 1 John 5 verse 4 says, faith is the victory that overcomes the world. Faith is the victory that overcomes the world. This is how you can bring about the fact that the church can be holy and blameless. And also remember some words that were said by God to Joshua. In Joshua, the first chapter, when Joshua is on the verge of leading the people of Israel into the land of Canaan, this is what God said to Joshua in chapter 1, verse 9. Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord God is with you wherever you go. Wherever you go. Maybe that's what we need to understand a little bit more of. That God goes with us wherever we go to help us to deal with the world. Romans chapter 12, verse 2 says, be not conformed to this world. And that's something that needs to be soaked into our minds steadily, diligently, daily. And we think sometimes we're not conformed to the world. But how easily it would be that we don't find ourselves doing anything but just kind of conforming to everything because we say that's just the way that it is. We just find ourselves being accepted by everybody and anybody. Because it's fun. Because of the lust. Because we coveted it. And we wanted it bad. But if we would just think about the world in the terms of the way God talks about the world, we would know probably more so why Jesus prayed what He prayed in John 17 about His disciples. Let them be there. Don't let them be of the world. Let them follow the truth. Sanctify them in the truth. Let them lead others to believe in Me just like they do. That is a tremendous responsibility. But it's one that everybody on this side of the building and this side of the building can follow through with. But there's probably been times when as a child of God, you have succumbed to the fun and the acceptance and the conformity. And you felt like it was so much easier than have to make any effort to change my life or to help other people change their life. Do you see where it's taking you? Do you see, too, the need to repent? Do you see, too, the need to pray to God to forgive you for that? And do you also see the need of where God can help you be holy and blameless? That's your challenge. That's what you can do. And as a result of that, be rewarded for doing it. Do you want that? Then do what's right.